Hello, and welcome to season two of Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources consultant in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, providing human resources advice and counsel to my business clients. I also support people through individual one-on-one coaching in helping with career development. I hope you will enjoy our series where we talk with ordinary, extraordinary people. We get to hear about interesting journeys. We get to talk with people about failures, successes, advice, and counsel to us as we develop our own careers. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with these people, and I hope you will enjoy listening to it. And now for some logistics. Please subscribe on YouTube, or if you're a listener, please follow me wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a chance, I hope you'll visit my website, career-resilience.com. Welcome. My guest today is Gord Delamont. Gord, welcome to Career Resilience.
Jan, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, this is going to be a great conversation. I just know it. Now, you wear a few hats in life.
I do.
Can you tell us a bit about what you do?
Like on the day-to-day?
On the day-to-day.
On the day-to-day. Well, as you say, I wear a couple of hats. And it's probably one of the more joyful parts of my occupation. In my world, I sort of wear an editorial hat, presiding over content, whether that would be content in the digital world or digital and print or exclusively print. And then my other hat is that of an entrepreneur and a business owner. So you get to deal with all of the fun things such as taxes and business growth and all of those things. So I've always said to anybody that would put up with me and listen, I have a right brain, left brain type of career, which I really like because it allows me to employ my creative side and then allows me to go about the business side as well.
And this is all in the auspices of London Inc. magazine.
Yeah, so essentially we have London Inc. We have a company, we have a parent company above that, which is called Treetown Media Group. And London Inc. is a division of Treetown. It would be certainly the product that probably most Londoners, for instance, are sort of most familiar with and associate our brand with. So that would be London Inc., yeah.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you, you came to entrepreneurship later in your career. What made you make such a dramatic transition? Because that's quite a thing to take on, your own thing.
Yeah. So without trying to get myself into any more legal trouble than I may have already got myself into in the past, I was an employee. I was editor and publisher of a similar product called Business London for many years, over 15 years. Okay. So rode that through, when I joined the company, it was a company called Bose Publishers that was sold to Toronto Sun, which in turn became Quebec Or, and then Quebec Or rolled it out into Post Media. So we went through a lot of changes, a lot of different companies. And but I always benefited from all of those companies were newspaper-centric companies.
And yes.
So I was running a business magazine, and I'd often say a lot of people didn't really know what to do with me. And so I think as long as, that EBITDA looked relatively okay on a monthly basis, everybody just left me alone. And so I really benefited from, I guess it would be called an intrapreneur type of career, where I really did feel like I was running my own business. So to get to the crux of your question, why did I just not continue with that? Well, you know, you're probably familiar, and most of your listeners and viewers are familiar with, you know, the struggles that have been going on in the media landscape over the last decade, at least. And it just became harder and harder for me to remain true to kind of my vision and what I wanted to do. And so I was really struggling with the corporate environment that I was in, and I decided to leave and strike out on my own. And so, as you mentioned, I was at a fairly senior time in my career to do that. But I did, and it's been 5 years now. We're just coming up on our fifth year anniversary. And, you know, although we spent two of those plus dealing with a pandemic, it's still been a real joy, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of sleepless nights, but man, has it ever been fun. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
I think that sleepless nights go along with being an entrepreneur, because you aren't just working in the business, you're working on the business. And that is quite a thing to take on, because you're doing everything, right? You have to think about the business growth, invoicing, all those things that go along with working on a business.
Yeah, it's another level of responsibility. So, you don't really have anybody else to fall back on but yourself. So, you know, you're responsible for your business, the bottom line of your business, the advancement, as you say, and the growth of your business. But you're also responsible for your employees, yes, and your clients, and you know, everything that encompasses a business. So, yeah, for sure, there's added responsibility, but it also makes the successes a little sweeter, for sure. And as you say, it's some sleepless nights, but I highly recommend it to anybody that considering stepping out and being an entrepreneur, especially these days, because it's very easy to do it. Highly recommend it.
What was your biggest surprise in becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess, you know, I think my biggest surprise was just the amount of work that's involved.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, I continue just to do what I was already doing. So it's not like I made a career jump or a sector jump. I was in the same business. I knew what I was doing, but you know, everything that encompasses being an entrepreneur and a business owner, and the amount of hours that it takes, especially when you're a small business, was a bit eye-opening.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you throw the pandemic on top of that, and it was a whole nother level of work. So yeah, it's a lot of work. And if that passion isn't there, I think that's where you'll see most people fail.
Yeah.
Because if the passion is there, it'll drive you. It'll drive you like nothing else, right? Yeah. And you know, fortunately for me, it is there.
Boy, that is so true. Yeah, you need that fuel to keep you going. How did you start out in terms of what did you go to school for? Let's go.
So this is interesting. You can follow the bouncing ball. music is my background.
Oh.
So I went to school for music, have a couple of music degrees. And I started, I grew up in a very literary household. My dad was a musician as well, but he was also an author. You know, I just kind of grew up in the type of household that got, you know, it was the day where you got three newspapers a day, and both of my parents were pretty voracious readers. And so, you know, kind of words, reading, journalism came very naturally to me, because I was just surrounded with it growing up. So you know, is in my early 20s and kind of trying to carve out a music career. And as most young musicians do, I was, you know, living in a house with eight other guys and doing that stuff and just trying to get along. But so one of the things I did is I landed an early column in a music magazine because I could kind of write. And so I started writing about various factions of the music industry, and that had some sort of early success. And then a family friend who was a business editor, at the time was working for a publication called the Mississauga Business Times, said, why don't you just branch out a little bit and do some work for me? And so he put me sort of to work in the real estate sector, the commercial real estate sector, covering the commercial real estate sector in Mississauga. That was sort of mid 80s when it was just booming.
Crazy,
so
yeah.
I that's how I sort of cut my teeth in business journalism. And, you know, there was a lot of learning because it was it was an active sector and a lot of stuff to get my head around. So. So that's really how I sort of got into it. And then one thing took over from the other, and then the sort of music career kind of went on the back shelf and journalism took over. And, you know, it's funny, you'll find a lot of people in journalism, you know, maybe not necessarily today, but certainly growing up in sort of my generation, people that crossed over from different industries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty prevalent.
Yeah. And how do you think all that musical background and acumen and interest and so on influenced your journalistic side?
I always listen to music when I work. maybe that's it. You know, I don't know. I'm not really sure it did. They're so completely diverse.
Yeah.
You know, occupations, and that it's, you know, there's a lot of discipline involved in both. You know, music is it's a world of practicing, and it's a world, there's a lot of self-discipline. So I suppose that kind of helped me out, especially in the early days. I sort of rolled out pretty much into journalism as a freelancer, and you know, those can provide some tough times because you're always looking, you're always digging for work as well as working. So you have to be somewhat disciplined, and I suppose that helped out a little bit.
Yeah, obviously, all these things, all these steps, and following the bouncing ball have made you the man you are today. That's the interesting thing about it, and I always find that people, when they're growing up, have no idea what they're really going to become. And you look back and you think, wow, I just sort of fell into that. And then I fell into that. And I was able to build on, well, as you say, my passion and my interests and so on. I wanted to ask you, who was the biggest influence or one of the bigger influencers on your life?
You certainly say, you know what, I would reach out to my dad. My dad died when I was relatively young, but you know, like anybody that's been fortunate to have fantastic parents, I mean, their influence on your life, however long or short it may be, always continues to stick with you. And, you know, you always run it through that filter. So I would certainly say that my parents had a lot to do with it. I don't think there's any one person professionally that I would look to. There's just been a whole bunch of people, you know, along the way that have helped out, that have guided, that have you know, provided advice and opportunity, which is great. And it became especially great in the entrepreneurial world because, you know, any entrepreneur will also tell you there's just as many people out there that want to see you fail. You know, people.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. And maybe it becomes of the competitiveness of your industry. I've had this conversation with other entrepreneurs too, and I think I really do think it's true. It's funny that there's a lot of people that will, you know, be supportive and be behind you, and will you know, could have been a coworker or wherever you might be stationed, and you know, would complain and bitch about things the same sort of volume as you would. And then once you kind of do something about it, they become very resistant to somebody going ahead and doing something. And it's, you know, I found that, and I entrepreneurs find that too. It's there's people that that don't want to see you succeed, and that's competitiveness of business. And fortunately, there's more people that do, and London is a fantastic city, you know, for support and assistance of all types.
Yeah,
but it can also be pretty competitive and cutthroat.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. First of all, I think that one of the reasons actually that London is a pretty supportive city is reading your magazine all the time and the things you do for the top 20 under 40 and best employer and things that sort of knit us together as a city, because it's not the same, as you said, of getting three newspapers a day or frequently even one newspaper a day. So you do good work to help with that knitting process.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's sort of, again, when we come back to passion, it's really what lies at sort of the crux of what we do is telling the story of London business people, of London entrepreneurs, of London business owners. And every story is fascinating. You know, people will, and there's never a shortage of them. You know, one of the questions I get asked quite frequently is, you ever run out of story ideas? And the answer to that is like, simply no. I mean, you just kind of get out there and scratch the surface and you find people doing tremendous things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm constantly surprised, you know, maybe not on a weekly basis, but on a monthly basis, where I'll stumble into a business that I haven't heard about. And I'm not talking about a sole proprietor, a business that, you know, may have 30, 40 employees and has been quietly kind of doing their thing down in South London or wherever it may be. And I'm like, man, I've never even heard of this business. And London is full of those surprises. And
yeah.
So, we're very passionate about people's success and telling their stories. And, you know, again, when we talk about creativity, and I didn't mean to sound earlier that the business wasn't creative, because I think it's tremendously creative.
It is.
And you know, you look at any sort of business launch or any business idea, and really it comes down to creativity, right? It doesn't matter whether it's in manufacturing, it doesn't matter if it's in tech or in retail. Somebody's getting creative with an idea and seeing it through. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's a very creative discipline. So it's something that we love to have our fingers in, for sure.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I was going to say about entrepreneurs is that we automatically think that they're rich, and we're not, if we're not an entrepreneur. And that's just so not the case. But people do think, oh my gosh, they can take as much vacation as they want, versus the reality is you can hardly squeeze a vacation in. Or, you know what, they get to pay themselves whatever they want, versus the reality of actually, you know what, when you're an entrepreneur, what you've done is bought yourself a job. And, you know, everything that goes into that, right?
That is precisely true, right? And I can't tell you how many times I've had that conversation with doctors. I mean, if you're not there, you stop working, well, the business stops, right? And that's, you know, if I ever get to be, you know, to the point where I'm employing 100 people or more, then, you know, maybe that lies out there somewhere, but not from what I've seen. You know, from the people that I've seen in this city that are working with larger companies, they're working as hard as everybody else. So
yeah,
absolutely true. Yeah, it's, and that's, again, where passion comes in, because nobody would want to do that. Nobody would want to assume those extra hours and that extra responsibility if you didn't have that passion for what you were doing. You might as well go back and just get yourself a gig.
So I wanted to ask you too, as you look back, can you tell us about a disaster you had in trying to get an edition out on time, or some interesting story along those lines?
Disaster. Like the disaster in the last 12 hours, I probably had two, but I don't know if I ever came to like a disaster status. I mean, if we've had some, I'm not going to tell you specifics, but we've had some, like, fortunately, this actually, it goes back in my career to when I wasn't an entrepreneur, but an employee. I had some a couple of disastrous front cover mistakes go on. So, and the problem with doing that in print, that's the joys of the digital world, right? Everything can be changed, everything can be altered. But once it's in print, man, it's there forever. And you have to live with it. So, you know, there's always been some, I think every journalist will tell you, there's always these little editorial things that happen, or big editorial boo-boos that happen, and they stick with you. Yeah. But nothing really, you know, from a production standpoint, we really ran into any trouble. No, you know, I can think about mail strikes and things like that right. really provided some, you know, again, you had to sort of be creative to get around them, but fortunately, knock on some wood, no major disasters yet. You better not have jinxed me.
I have not jinxed you, not to worry. I did want to mention your Bitmoji. So on LinkedIn, your Bitmoji is very interesting. It's a man.
Supposed to be me.
Like sitting at a bar, staring at a glass with some ice cubes in it. And the expression is, to me, rather sad and poignant. So yeah. Tell me about your Bitmoji choice.
You know, there really isn't anything other than I like to change. It pops up, right? So it pops up on LinkedIn and I like to change it now and then, right? So when I, rather than just looking for another picture of myself, I'm one of those people that just hates having my picture taken, and I just don't like it, right? So when the Bitmojis came along, I think we were fooling with them, and my wife and I were, look at this one. There's me sitting at a bar over an empty, you know, scotch tumbler, right? And I like that one. And so, yeah, one day I just threw it up on my LinkedIn profile, and actually you were the very first person to comment on it. So,
Know what? It inspired me to think, gee, I should change my photo to a Bitmoji. Because
I've looked at it at times and gone, it's probably not all that professional. It may not be that appropriate. My last one, and I probably changed that maybe 3 or 4 months ago. My last one was when I was, it's a picture of me as a toddler. 3-year-old with an army helmet on. So I ran that one for a bit too.
But I think that's fun, and that's your creative side, right? Because most of
I think it's out a photo. Social media, just trying to have a little, I mean, sometimes you know it's social media, you never know how anybody's going to take anything, right? So it's it's just me having a little fun. That's it.
You are kind of out there with your business, because it's something that, you know, we look at all the time, all of us out here. How do you cope with criticism and less than positive feedback? What are some tips for us?
So again, I think you go back to your history, right? And so that's one of the things as my early career as a musician, and then as a freelance journalist, you develop a thick skin very early, and you learn to handle rejection, you learn to process rejection, and then you also learn to process criticism. And a part of it now is, I think, Jen, to get your earlier question about being an older entrepreneur, I think you benefit a little bit, because as you get a little bit older, I don't think things affect you as much, right? And I mean, you're you, and you make a decision, and you're willing to stand by that decision, and that's going to be me. And then you realize as you sort of age that there is no way in hell that you're pleasing everybody. And that's just the way it is. And so you do your best, and you try to stay true to your vision and your ethos, and then you go from there. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, I don't get too bent out of shape. You know, if somebody's not happy with me.
Yeah.
Maybe because it happens so often too.
Gosh, I doubt it. Yeah. And I think that with you, you've gone your own way. And you probably started doing that fairly early on. And that independence is so important.
Yeah. You know, I often think that, boy, you know, in terms of becoming an entrepreneur, boy, do I ever wish I had done it earlier. And I do for a variety of reasons, mainly just to give myself a longer runway. But outside of that, with what am I, the timing was right for me to launch my business when I did. So I think had I done it 10 years earlier, I probably would not have been able to do it just from a competitiveness aspect. So the timing was right for me to launch Treetown Media and London Inc. when I did. But having said that, I would really have liked to become an entrepreneur a little bit earlier. Yeah.
But don't you think that's mostly about your thoughts about runway? I mean, the runways is.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I look at myself and I go, you know, I wish, you know, I'm at the point of my life, like I'm getting close to 6-0. So it's where, you know, I've got friends retiring and people are, or they've already retired or they're looking at the retirement plans. And I go, yeah, that's not even on my radar right now. I'm trying to run a business. Which I'm happy for, because, you know, I feel like I got a few more laps. Secondly, I don't know what I do with myself. Like, I just like to be engaged. The whole idea of retirement doesn't, at this point in time in my life, doesn't hold any appeal to me. But yeah, I sometimes worry down, you know, I sometimes sit there and think about, hey, man, I better accomplish a lot in the next 5 years. So I've got the business where I want it to be to, you know, look towards succession. So yeah, the runway, you feel that, you hear the clock ticking.
I want to comment on that in terms of, I often think a lot of times that retirement is to do with the extent of the physical labor you have to do in your job. And sometimes the machine wears out. It just does. And so you're ready for retirement, you know, if you're on the line somewhere. And I think in terms of your job, it's all up here, Gord. And that has a very long runway, probably as long as what you're interested in having. That tends to me to be the difference there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, right? I mean, my job is anything but physical, and jobs of a physical nature require, you know, a whole bunch of things that,
yeah,
you know, a cerebral type job or a job where you're sitting at a desk job.
Would you like your children to follow in your footsteps in the career choices you've made?
Well, so I have, between my wife and I, we have 4 wonderful kids, dispersed around the country. So I do have 1 son. So my two boys, one's in the military, one's an officer, an infantry officer. So lots of worries there these days.
Yes.
My older son is a journalist, lives in Halifax. I did the best I could to discourage him.
Did you?
Yeah, just because I knew what I've been working in the industry and I knew the challenges. And I knew that it was, you know, at the time, not a growth industry and lots of struggles and you know, you're going to be fighting. But no, the passion is. So, you know, came his passion. And then so that's fantastic. So, yeah. So, you know what? And he's involved in the business. He's an associate editor with London Inc. So that's a fantastic element, you know, to be able to work with your kids. Yeah. Yeah. Great. So he wants to continue to do it and move on back to London and maybe take this thing off my hands when I'm 93.
And may I say, having worked with him, he's so personable and great to work with. And the end product of his writing is superb. So he's obviously a chip off the block.
Thank you. We have our battles. We have our social battles sometimes, which are fantastic. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I have the final edit, right? So if he's leaning a little too far left with me, I'll just change the wording on that for a little bit.
Is it not so much easier to edit than to write?
Yeah, it is. It is for me. I was never and am still not a particularly quick writer. I envy, you know, I speak of my son. I you know, he can turn around 600,000 words in like bat of an eye. And boy, oh boy, do I ever envy that, because I'm one of those writers that kind of struggles with every sentence. I like pace, and I like lyricism in writing. And boy, it's easier to edit it than it is to do it.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing. So, you know, as my career kind of went on, I found that I was much more comfortable in an editing space than a writing space. But that's where the creation comes from, though. It's the writing. So it's still something I really enjoy doing, but it's laborious for me. Yeah.
I wanted to turn to my three questions that I did let you know that I wanted to ask. And the first one is, what has been the best advice you've received about, let's say, career advice?
Yeah, I thought about that. And, you know, I thought, it's been some detailed career advice. But I always come back to a friend of mine who said something to me maybe 30 years ago, and it's always stuck with me. And that is simply under promise, over deliver. And it's one of those things that you sort of, I end up filtering everything. And it's, you know, sounds kind of simple. But if you filter everything, if you, it's a matter of not overextending yourself. It's a matter of going through a process of being able to deliver on whatever you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then when you do it, make sure it's a little sweeter and it's a little better than you originally intended. So it's sort of really simple advice, and it's just something that's always stuck with me and I always come back to.
Oh, that's a great one. That is really great. Now, secondly, is there a book that you've read that has influenced you in some way?
So I will say to this question that in terms of my business life, I read very little nonfiction, but I read loads and loads of fiction. So I'm one of those people that if I don't have a book on the go, something's out of kilter with my life, right? It's just something's not right. Now, I read lots and lots of business periodicals, whether it be online or in print, and I get a lot of business advice that way. But I'm not a big reader of nonfiction, and when I do, it's usually narrative nonfiction, Eric Larson type of novels. So I don't think, to get back to your original question, I don't think there's a particular one book that has given me, you know, real pause for thought or has really influenced me. I love the escapism of fiction. I love, you know, just being able to sit down and read for 15 minutes, 20 minutes before bed or in the morning, whenever it is.
Is there a genre? Is there a genre of fiction?
Oh boy! So you know, all the highbrows need to plug their ears, because I'm sort of a serial mystery person.
Okay.
Sort of the Lee Child, James Patterson, okay. You know, David, Baldacci kind of thing. That's really what I'm into. But I'll read a lot of different stuff. But, you know, again, I go back to, it was my dad that instilled that love. And it was, you know, the John D. McDonald's Travis McGee series. And so that's really what put me on a course of loving sort of, you know, serial mystery novels. And I still do to this day.
Speaking of entrepreneurs, I mean, you have to hand it to James Patterson for the career he's built in, in writing. It's just so impressive.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you know what? We learn so much from fiction. I mean, I'm like you. I love fiction. I cannot go a day without reading because I disappear into it. And I appreciate an opportunity to disappear into something.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's one of those things that provides some balance to your life and you know, takes your mind out of, you know, takes your mind out of whatever you might be thinking about the day or what challenges you. And it's just one of those things to sort of that, remain, that keeps you healthy, keeps you in a healthy mental state, or at least contributes to a healthy mental state.
I believe that. I really do.
Yeah.
And finally, what would be your advice to your younger self?
So again, I think it's simple again, Jen, it's not deep. It's just don't overthink, just do. And, you know, that it becomes paramount. It's actually something that's become very paramount through the pandemic. We were one of those businesses that really faced a challenge in terms of revenue and in terms of having to pivot our business into different forms. And, you know, I was already, I think, well along the path to be able to sort of come up with an idea and start to execute it. But it became all the more important during this pandemic because things needed to be done quickly. And so, you know, you just started throwing ideas at the wall. And if, you know, they stuck, then you worked at them, you massaged them, you developed them. If they didn't, you turned your back on them and went on to something else. And again, it's that ability to not take something as an entrepreneur, when you come up with an idea, you come up with a concept or a new business stream, I mean, you invest yourself. And then so you, when maybe it doesn't flourish or it doesn't mature, or it doesn't stick, again, it's those feelings, right? And you can become married to it. And go, why didn't this? But you just got to be able to walk away from it and try something else. And that became really important in the pandemic. And I think, you know, I think as a younger person, I may have struck out on my own earlier. But again, you know, it's sometimes people overthink things. It's like, well, this needs to be in place. This needs to be in place. This needs to be in place. It really doesn't, right? It's, you know, I guess a way of somebody said to me, good's better than perfect these days. And that's, you know, that's the way it kind of is. So get your idea out there, get it, because you can work on it once it's up and live, whatever that idea might be. You know, find a way to launch something, and then you'll know pretty soon whether you've got something.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's something that's become sort of really important to me. And when I find myself thinking about an idea and going back and forth, I just go, okay, I got to get out of this mindset. Let's just either do it or not do it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's ready, shoot, aim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very true. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Gord, thanks so much for this. Is there anything else that you want to comment on? Or, I mean, this has been quite,
you know, I don't think so. It's been a delightful conversation, Jen. Our passion from a career standpoint and from a business standpoint is London entrepreneurs and London business people. And you know, we're very fortunate to be able to tell the stories of people and get to meet so many fascinating people. And these days there's, again, you know, we chatted about it, there's no shortage. And it's, you see people you know, launching all kinds of creative endeavors. And you know, this whole advent of the side hustle has brought this whole nother layer of entrepreneurialism to society. People that have a career and then are picking away at the side of something, which may become a full-time occupation. We've covered many stories over the last couple of years where that's come to fruition for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, whether they've been laid off during a pandemic or sitting at home and they've got some more time to pick away at something.
Yes.
And you're seeing a lot of sort of incubated ideas really take hold. So it's an amazing time to sort of be an entrepreneur, and it's a great time to watch the city grow. And we're just fortunate to be able to have sort of a front row seat.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And to our viewers and listeners, thanks so much for joining Gord and me in this conversation. And I have to say, there is not an edition of London Inc. that goes by that my husband and I don't say to each other, "Did you see that in London Inc.? That was interesting, wasn't it?" So this is quite a service that you provide us, Gord. It really is, and we appreciate it. For those of you who like to watch, we are on YouTube. For those of you who like to listen, please listen on wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks so much again for joining in on this each time. Thank you very much. Till we meet again.